to the Plain Label Podcast, episode 65.
The sky is blue and all the leaves are green. The sun's as warm as a baked potato. I think I know precisely what I mean when I say it's a spadoinkle day.
Just do your part. It's in his school, so you can flunk out.
You don't pay for it, Tim does.
That's half what I got.
You're an asshole. I hate coming here.
Why you act like such a dick?
Hello, and welcome to the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Zelag, and along with me, I have my good friend and co-host, Eric Suzanne Williams.
Hello.
In this episode, we conclude our look at survival films with a discussion on Cannibal the Musical, Open Water, and War of the Worlds. Before doing that, we would like to mention we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of their other shows. Alrighty, bitches. It's drink roll call time. What do we got?
Oh, we forgot to mention that we once again have Cameron Rice joining us.
We got Cameron.
Yep, I'm alive.
I forgot to put that in there.
I'm alive.
Cameron, what are you having drink-wise?
I'm getting over a cold, so I'm having water with a bit of lemon in it.
Oh, risky.
Keep this throat going. Keep the golden pipes happening on this show.
Mrs. Zelag.
I'm having vodka with a bit of lemon in it.
Oh, smart.
Yeah.
I like that. I am also...
Is there a blender or a vacuum going on?
There's something. She's radioing the people. The aliens. Aliens.
Yes.
I am also having vodka, but I'm having...
grapefruit.
The usual. The grapefruit vodka. Mm-hmm. This is high-rise vodka that Anel and I are getting paid to drink. Because it costs $9.99, and there's a $15 mail-in rebate that we got.
Nice.
Mall and rebate.
Yeah, mail and rebate. That's what we're having. So that's good. So let's go ahead and start off the discussion with 1993's film, Cannibal the Musical.
In the cold winter of 1874, six men set out on a journey through the Colorado Rockies. They were looking for gold, but what they found was that they were completely lost.
I'm Alfred Packer. This is my horse, Leanne.
In the tradition of Friday the 13th, Part 2, and Oklahoma, comes the first intelligent film about cannibalism.
Gross, Packer!
So let's build a snowman, we can make him our best friend. We can name him Shannon Wilson Bell. We can make him tall, or we can make him not so...
I'm shatterproof. There's nothing you can show me. I'm still standing tall, so you all can blow me. I'm shatterproof.
Alfred Packer was a mountain guide and sole survivor of a party of pioneers that got lost in the mountains in winter. Accused and convicted of murdering and eating his traveling companions, he was to be executed by hanging. The movie begins at his trial, where he pleads his innocence to an unsympathetic audience. Only reporter Polly Pry will listen to his story, which is then related to the viewers in the form of flashbacks. As Parker and his gold prospecting clients make their way through the forests and mountains, they encounter bemused Japanese Indians, an unimpressed group of mountain men, and the brutal Rocky Mountain winter, all of which inspire the travelers to break out into song and dance.
So this film was Cameron's selection.
Mm-hmm.
It was a movie that I had never heard of, let alone seen. It is available on Netflix Instant, so it's not like, it's not hard to find, like some of the films that Cameron and I have discussed on our other show. So, Mr. Rice, why did you pick this one?
Well, because I had picked survival films in the first place, I wanted to try and pick something a little different because, the first round, we kind of picked, more serious films, and I was between this and Ravenous. And Ravenous is a film from 1997, 98 with Guy Pearce, and it's also a cannibal film, and very B-movie, British gore kind of thing. And so I was kind of between these two films, and I decided to go with Cannibal because, it's, I feel like maybe a little lesser known film, though there's definitely a cult for that film as well. And also that'd be interesting to go for a comedy, in this game and, a musical as well. It's worth noting we haven't said yet that this is, Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first thing. This is actually something they made this in college. This was their college senior film.
Yeah. I saw that they, were going out on weekends to shoot this and failed their history class due to it and that sort of thing. So
that's bullshit.
It's like as independent as it gets.
Yeah, this and I kind of wanted to talk about this movie too because it kind of reminds me. It's in the vein of something like the first Evil Dead film or Bad Taste, Peter Jackson's first movie. These kind of films where people go and decide that they're going to make a movie. They've never made one before. They're going to go make a movie and they just kind of push the boundaries of movie making, but because they're fans of movies, they still know how to tell a story. Because there's some people who are like, I'm going to go make a movie and have no idea how to make a movie and don't know what story structure is for the life of them. So for me, I just think it's interesting to see these two guys who are now like culturally huge presences, doing, their first film.
Sure. Holy Moses.
I think Rachel just got sucked into a wind tunnel.
Cruz, what did you think of this one?
I mean, you could tell it was a first for them. As far as like their I thought it was funny that I saw like glimpses of South Park coming through it.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he takes his pioneer hat off and he has a giant red afro.
Sure. Sure.
And, you know, I thought a couple times, like, that it almost could now, like, I could see this being, like, a South Park episode. You know, where, like, Kyle's the one that's in jail and he's, like, giving a flashback to somebody, you know, how they just do whatever. And so, like, I thought it was really fun to see, like, the beginnings of the ridiculousness that comes later in life, from this.
Yeah, I think that's sort of what my take on it was as well. Like, I thought that it was, you know, it was fun.
Mm-hmm. And
that's normally, you know, we talk about films that were going to challenge us was one of Cameron's original ideas for themes. Fun movies are ones that are challenging for me. It would seem, for people that listen to the show, but I had a good time with it. It wasn't something that I, we'll probably run out and tell everyone about, oh, you gotta see this. But it was a, you know, if the discussion turns towards like Basketball or South Park, it'd be like, oh, you know what else is funny? You should see their first movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something along those lines. But there were definitely sequences that made me laugh. There were things that made me, roll my eyes Cruise style.
Right.
But overall, I liked it more than I didn't like it. So
yeah,
I thought it was good.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What now, Cruz? You're a big musical fan.
Yeah.
So, what did you think of the musical numbers and the song and dance and those sort of things that were in this?
I thought that they, I don't want to say well done because that, I mean, that's not even what they were going for anyway.
Mm.
The snowman building was.
Oh yes.
Ridiculous.
That was, see, I was gonna say that was my favorite song. That one was.
Oh, of course. And, you know, right at the beginning when they're like parodying Oklahoma and they're like, it's a schmadoozly day or whatever, like
Schmadoinkle, which is a word.
Schmadoinkle.
I love that they keep bringing it back anytime someone trips or anything.
Right. And so the first time I was, you know, like the first chorus or whatever, I'm rolling my eyes, but by the end of that song, I'm laughing. And then every, like you said, every time they bring it up, I'm giggling to myself. So, I thought it was funny, you know, like, I'm sure that, like, when they cooked this up, that was the whole premise, like, Cannibal the musical. Obviously, you don't make a musical about cannibalism, and the fact that they're singing songs during, you know, like, while they're eating people, it just makes it more South Park, you know, like more of them, and it adds to the funniness, I guess, the like ridiculous situational.
I think it's also the fact that it's like these songs, like they're funny, but I think what makes Trey Parker, who wrote the songs and obviously went on to write the songs for South Park and now Book of Mormon and stuff like that, is what I like is that the songs are funny, but it's like, if you were just like passively listening to them, you wouldn't like realize, like they would just sound like musical songs.
Like, yeah, you have to pay attention to the lyrics for it to be. Yeah. Funny, yeah.
And so they sound real. So that's what makes it like, for me, work. And I think also like this movie's enjoyable because it's the first thing they did, but it's also the fact that, you know, at this time they're like 24, 25 maybe when they made this. And there's that thing that I enjoy about it, which is that, you know, as you get older, your humor maybe becomes more refined, or maybe you become a little more clever, but I think there's still jokes in this that are super funny. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think a lot of Matt Stone's lines, make me, or the things that involve Matt Stone, like when he cooks food that looks like horse shit.
Yes.
And the guy just goes, "You piece of shit, Humphreys." Or when they finally do decide to eat the guy, and he's like, "No, don't cut into his butt."
Yeah.
What cut do you? What part do you want then?
Well, yeah. Not butt.
Well, and he's like chewing on his arm, and the other guy throws up, and he's like, "Oh, disgusting!"
He's like, "Oh, it's so gross."
Yeah.
I figured Rachel's favorite part was, or favorite character was the, I forget his name, but the guy that's continually trying to get laid.
Quagmire.
Oh, the guy from basketball.
Yeah. To where he's like,
Squeak?
Well, because he's just saying things like, you know, once they decide that he's kind of at his lowest point, and he's like, "Oh, now I'm never gonna do it doggy style. Now I'm never gonna 69. And I could just imagine Cruz cracking up and that stuff.
Yeah, that is funny to me.
I love when they were undressed and getting warm, and he's like, "I'm just pretending, Mr. I'm pretending Mr. Miller here's just a pretty woman." Right.
Yeah, what I liked though is it had that same sensibility of to where they were, bordering on the line of offensive with all of their jokes. Like that's the sense of humor that they have.
Right.
And I was glad to see that it started early on. It wasn't. I mean, yes, it's been developed and as Cameron said, refined a bit, but it's still that's their cut of comedy that they like. Like that's their playground.
Yeah, and the fact that at certain times you have to be paying attention to get some of the jokes.
Well, I even think of things that, I mean, are clear jokes, but are just little throwaway things, like when the sheep shows up and the guy starts unbuckling his pants. He's like, "Well, I gotta take a piss." You know? Just stuff like that. Like, that made me laugh pretty hard.
The Japanese Indian tribe. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Completely unexplained.
Terrible.
It's hilarious, because they're probably like, you know, we could really be offensive on this, or we could just be, like, ridiculous and offensive and just come out of, you know, left field and, you know, still, yeah. I agree with what you're saying, like, that same humor, I can still see it today, but yeah, it's like, I'm glad that, because when I started watching this at the beginning, I'm like, this is the first thing I'm like, if it's going to be like awkward for me to watch this because it's going to be sloppy, and it wasn't nearly as sloppy as I thought it was going to be. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I really do like that beginning part though, because it has the
ultraviolence.
The ultraviolence. It also,
oh my God.
It reminded me.
Which actually, it's worth noting that was put in after the film was, this film is, was put out by Troma Films. Troma, their biggest claim to fame was The Toxic Avenger. That's what they put out. And Captain Kabuki and Class of Nukem High. Troma does one or two things. Either A, they create their own movies. Lloyd Kaufman's the founder of Troma. And they tend to be ultra violent, weird kind of comedies, or they'll buy other people's movies. And for the most part, the films they buy are not usually as good as their original films. This is sort of the outlier. Is Cannibal the Musical. And they bought Cannibal, and then they said, but you need to have some kind of super violence at the beginning, so it's a trauma movie. And so they actually went and reshot that. That's why, if you notice, it looks a little bit better. It's color corrected in certain ways. It's got kind of a black and white feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just liked it in that the physical, like the gore, it reminded me of a Monty Python kind of a...
Oh, yes. like when the rabbit jumps up and bites everyone in the neck.
Yeah, with the rabbit and with the Black Knight.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what that's what it made me think of immediately. And I was like, oh, well, that's gotta be an influence, or that's gotta be something to them.
Yeah.
And that made me like, I was like, oh, okay, well, this is gonna be all right. Cause, you know, I'm much more of a fan of, South Park, the film, than I am basketball. So I didn't know how I was gonna take them as in a live action film.
Sure.
But I did love the cut to after the violence into the courtroom, and then you just hear one guy go, oh, gross!
Yeah. And that's how it happened. Like, yeah.
I also do like, one of the other things I think is so funny is the old lady that throws the tomato and just smokes him right in the back of the head.
Ow.
He just turns around and she's just sitting there.
I love the homages to, like, clearly Friday the 13th, like the old man saying they're doomed if they go to Colorado.
Oh, right.
And then obviously the character of Belle not dying.
Oh, sure.
Yes. Oh, man.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just love the character of Alfred Packer, how he's like this complete innocent, like when he throws the rock into the river.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's like, what the hell was that supposed to prove? I don't know.
Because they were checking the depth and he just throws a rock in there. Like, how deep do you think it is?
He throws. And one of my favorites was the discussion on music after the Trapper song.
Mm. Oh, yes. The C minor, F sharp, all that stuff.
Yes. That made me laugh a lot.
What scales are you singing in? And then good. The fact that I like that some people clearly can't sing, but they still try anyway. Like one of the Trappers like, yo-ho.
So Cameron, with this being a comedic film and you being a stand-up comic, like what, is this something to where you can see sort of what they're doing? Do you think that a lot of this is improvised? Or do you think that it's all, you know, kind of very strictly written out? Or are there things you can like, oh, I can see that, or oh, look, you know.
I think when you're doing something like this, like a student film kind of thing, I think you kind of have to be strict on the script. Mm-hmm. And also I think from my understanding, Parker and Stone, I think in South Park, I think when they're in the recording studio, I think they will sometimes do stuff, but for the most part, I think they're pretty much stick to the script guys. Cause the stuff they tend to come up with, like Team America is another thing, like you can't really do improv with puppets.
Mm.
Like you kind of have to hit the marks and all that other stuff. So,
yeah, don't miss the mark like Michael Bay did.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think for me, like I discovered this film. This was, I think in 2002. It was one of those, walking into a video store and just looking through the racks and I saw the cassette tape.
Wow. And I just, said a lot of things in the past.
I know.
Yeah, a lot of things that don't exist.
And I just picked it up and watched it and I thought it was like super funny. It was just one of those weird things too, like as a fan of South Park, like that I had never heard of this.
Sure.
And so I felt like a nice little discovery. And then also, I think for me, like as somebody who myself wants to go and make movies, there's something like I find kind of inspiring about movies like this. And like I said, like Evil Dead and Bad Taste and stuff like that. These people who are like, I'm going to go make a movie with my friends. And we shot it over 2 years on weekends.
Yeah. It's good.
I've watched this a couple of times now. And I think like there's just like so many like absurd little moments like. The Hang the Bastard song when it gets to the puppets singing. Like explaining it to the children.
The songs are probably my favorite part.
Oh, and I love the songs that they're singing when they're going to hang him. And they have the people dancing.
Yeah, yes. We're going to hang him. Like, they're all so excited. You go to hanging and.
Yeah, I think for me, like, it really, but then, I mean, the number for me is Let's Build a Snowman when he gets killed.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The second time he brings it up.
Oh, yeah. Or when they're trying to sing about what they, like the first time
what they want.
What they want, and the last time is they just want to survive. I just want to be alive. Yeah.
I think also, yeah. I love the runner of the urine timeout.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which the second one when it comes to Belle, it's like, what about Mr. Belle? I don't want any. Fine. Urine timeout anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah. You're in trouble. It's your fault.
It's funny. It's funny stuff. Yeah. The only downside for me watching it was that, you know, I was like, oh, okay, well, how are we going to talk, like, what is there to talk about it, you know? It's, and that's why we, on this show, I don't know that we really try to avoid or anything like that comedies, but it's harder to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
yeah, I think for me it was just about trying to add like a new flavor, because if you pick survival films, it's gonna be a lot of drama. So I'm like, well, let's pick one that kind of parodies.
Oh no, I'm definitely glad we watched this. I think it was one that I have obviously never seen, but I'm glad that we threw it in here for sure.
Yeah,
and I mean, I love like the beards, like how fake the beards get by the
end. Oh yeah. Oh man.
And I love Trey Parker's, like, when he's singing what's basically like a poison love ballad to his horse and doing ballet, that he's got like the blue eyes and this long black hair.
Oh, yeah. And those trappers were nasty, and they had like biker jackets on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the googly eyes on the hat.
Oh, and the guy that kept talking trash about his hat too.
And then the joke that it's such an immature joke, but the fact that the guy gets like beat up in his balls really bad and then apparently still has a high squeaky voice like months later.
That's good. That is good stuff.
So yeah, I mean, this film's on Netflix. I think it's definitely like, if you are a fan of South Park and that humor, I think it's worth a watch.
Yeah, I would say so. Well, do you have anything else, either one of you, before we move on to our next film?
No.
Negative? All right. Our next film is decidedly different than Hannibal the Musical. It is my selection. It is 2003's Open Water.
Other people go on vacations and spend their days just laying around. We have a story we're going to be telling for the rest of our lives. Good question.
As we are stuck in the middle of the ocean. Oh God. Oh.
It's okay. It's okay. This can't be happening.
Oh my God.
Susan! Susan!
A couple on a holiday in the Caribbean decide to spend the day on a scuba diving trip, but was it the wrong decision? When a miscount happens on the boat, Susan and Daniel are left behind in the middle of the ocean, the boat long gone. With all their hopes set on the boat coming back to rescue them, they try to keep themselves safe, especially when sharks start to appear.
So the reason that I picked this film is, you know, I had originally had something else, but last episode we had discussed women in survival films and how traditionally it's a male-dominated genre. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I've seen Open Water. That's, you know, just a couple and it has an interesting dynamic in it. So I'll select that. So I've, you know, I think this is probably maybe only the second or third time that I've seen it. But I still enjoyed it. I thought that, there were some things that bothered me a little bit more this time around, or maybe I noticed a little bit more. You know, we were talking about the student film aspect of Cannibal the Musical. I thought that the beginning was really, non-professional actor seeming.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I was like, okay, let's get in the water already. Like, oh boy. But what, Cruz, let's start with, well, Mrs. Zelak. I like how I'm calling you Cruz all night tonight.
You can call me Cruz. It's fine.
Rachel, what is your history with this film? Is this the first watch for you?
Yeah.
Okay, and what did you think of it?
I hate agreeing with you because it makes me mad, but I'm agreeing with you on that too. Like, right when the movie begins, I'm like, oh my God, are we really doing close-up shots of things and
like door handles and light switches?
Yeah, or... you know, it looked, cause, and like my question was like, it looks like someone's taping them, but not, you know, but like nobody it looks like someone's following them around with a homemade video camera, but like nobody is. And so like that.
Yeah,
but,
it's not a found footage movie.
Yeah, it comes off like that it is.
Yeah, it does.
Not,
at the beginning it does. Once they, you know, get into the boat and get in the water, as far as like that goes, it's better. So, but yeah, like, and like, I'm not one that's gonna like turn down getting naked in a movie, but I really didn't understand why she was just hanging out naked.
You know, that's funny. Before we go to camera, you know, Anel and I watched this, and I liked the bathroom scene with the two spits, you know, and
right
where they do that, and then she was the first one to point out the boobs. I was just kind of like, okay, there's boobs on the screen, and she's like, whoa, look at that, you know, and yada yada yada. But she, after she decides that she's not in the mood and doesn't sleep with him, Anel like lost her compassion for the woman. She's like, look, there's reasons you get naked, and sex is 99 of them.
Right.
Maybe it's really hot over there. Maybe it's like 100 something degrees. Huh?
So we don't know, but that was not an excuse that was flying for her. So she just kind of like F her.
Well, I kind of thought the same thing, and like, I can understand, like, we were watching that French movie and, like, people are just naked all over the place, but, like, there really wasn't, like, they could have had that same conversation and she could have had her clothes on.
She could have been sweatshirt and sweatpants.
Right.
It would have been
much different. Like, even just show her maybe in bed with, like, you know, and like I said, I'm not saying, like, oh, I don't, because, like, I don't care if people are showing boobs in movies, but, like, there was no, like, plot related reason for her to just, you know, just like being it. And so I just thought that was really odd.
Yeah. Cameron, what's your history with this one, and what did you think of it?
Okay. So this is a first time watch for me.
Oh, interesting. I always like it when it's actually a first time watch for Cameron. I feel like Cameron's seen all of the movies.
Every one of them.
All of them.
I know my history as far as like, I remember it came out. I didn't get around to seeing, I can't remember why. I just know a buddy of mine, whose taste I will say are suspect, I will say that, said this is one of the worst movies he's ever seen in his life.
Oh.
And again, his tastes are suspect, so I was kind of like, pretty much like open-minded. This aired on IFC, which is funny, because IFC, it has movies uncensored, like they're completely like, if there's cursing, if there's nudity, it's all there, but they still have commercials, so it's really interesting to watch a movie with like, full-on bush, and like, the F word thrown around, and then suddenly like cutting to a commercial and being like
McDonald's. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, whoa, my mind. So I'm going to say what I liked first. Cause I'm going to be honest right now. Everything I'm going to say after what I say, what I liked, I'm going to sound like a big old hypocrite considering what I liked about Cannibal
the
Musical.
Nice. All right.
So I think once they're in the water, like I really actually enjoyed the two actors.
Okay.
Like,
yeah,
they played it really, you know, really
they play,
well.
They play a couple pretty well.
Yeah, they play a couple pretty well. Like, you're in the moment with them and stuff like that. So I did enjoy that. And I thought some of the stuff with the real sharks was pretty cool. I kind of wish there was more information as far as like how they shot it, because I couldn't find much. Mm-hmm. Like, the Wikipedia page is more about the real life story that this is based on.
Right.
Than the filming of the movie. So anyway, moving forward. So what I said about, you know, Cannibal the Musical was that I kind of like, you know, seeing first time filmmakers and people who have a passion, like I want to go make a movie. And maybe they don't exactly know how, but they're going to try. And my big caveat for that was that these are people who probably have always wanted to make movies. So they have a basic idea for story structure. Mm-hmm. Even if like in the editing, things are a little floppy and things like that, they have a basic idea of how to get things moving. You know, where the arcs should be and what scene and how scenes matter. Reading about the people that made this movie, it seems like they were professional scuba divers and this is just the movie they really wanted to make. Fair enough. I was mad bored during a good, like, I ended up watching, I think, a good chunk of this movie at 1.5 speed.
Nice.
Yes, there's no talking. I mean,
This movie could have started with them on the boat.
Absolutely could have.
The only reason it feels like we are in, like, where they are at first. We find out about her job, the nakedness in the hotel, the getting on the boat, the dude who's like, I forgot my mask.
Oh, the fucking...
The jersey guy.
The douchebag jersey guy. That's what I want.
I feel like that's all there because otherwise their movie would have been 55 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have been shown in theater, so they had to pad it out.
Had to get it feature length, yeah.
And I have no problem with people having conversations in rooms. I love John Cassavetes movies, and I love, like, you know, character dramas where it is just two people in a room having conversations.
Yeah, David Mamet movies, right?
Yeah, but commonly, those conversations are leading towards something. It's showing you something about the characters. Why this scene is here because you're learning about the characters. It's momentum. This might come up later, so on and so forth. These conversations are like, they're kind of just supposed to get a point, the point across that this couple is maybe a bit on the rocks. Like, they're not super strong, but they still don't mind being naked in front of each other and making fun of each other with their face masks and all this. So which is fine, but I'm like, you can do that in 5 minutes. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move a little bit.
It was very deliberately paced, for sure.
And there was enough shots too of like we said, like the door handle and the lamp and all this other stuff. And I'm like, why are you doing this? And there was a number of scenes where I felt like they were using the audio straight from the camera.
Yes.
Which I was like, you know, that should for some people that's not a big deal. There's a lot of independent movies that come out and they use audio straight from the camera. We all have our things for whatever reason. I can't stand that. I can't do it. Like. Huh? I don't know why. I can stand a lot of things in movies. I can forgive stupid characters, dumb plots, all this other stuff. If your mic is brutal, I almost shut off automatically. I don't know why. I guess because in my mind, I'm like, because I know how to rent mic equipment and it's like $40 for a weekend. So to me, I'm like, inexcusable. This is bullshit. But whatever. Also, there's just certain character things like, maybe this is me being a California native, so growing up near the ocean my whole life, I don't know, but do people not know you're not supposed to drink seawater?
Right?
I live in
Nebraska.
Yeah, we're like the definition of landlocked, and I think that's pretty common knowledge.
I mean, maybe if this was a movie from the 1970s, I'd be like, well, yeah, maybe that's not public. This is supposed to take place when it's happening, which is in 2003.
Yeah, that was my other question. For them being like, let's go scuba diving, they both seem to not know too much about scuba diving.
Yeah.
I guess. Or at least she doesn't, for sure.
It didn't seem so. You know, and that was the thing is, the question was asked, like, do they know what they're doing? You know, and I was like, well, yeah, you know, he says that they're certified, you know, they're certified
right.
Scuba divers.
They had their little carts.
Yeah.
They don't teach you in scuba school not to drink the water. I think that's sort of not right, but whatever.
So there's that. And then you also have like, I truth be told, like this kind of feels like stuff where when you're writing the movie, you're kind of like, well, people might be asking this. So we got to put it in the movie. I never needed to go back to land.
Oh, yeah.
I never needed to go back to the boat captain who cannot act. Finding their bag and pulling it up and then him having a flashback of the two of them on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Didn't need that. Did not need the manager knocking on the door being like, hello, it's the manager. Hello. And opening their door. Cause again, it's that thing of like, why are we seeing this? What's the information we're gathering? The information, I guess, is that, oh, now people know and people are going to go look for him. But spoilers, they both die in the end. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Nobody finds them. Nobody finds anything. They find the camera and the shark, which, by the way, I didn't need to see a real shark get cut up.
No, yeah. No. Yeah, that was intense.
Didn't need that.
I wondered that, too, and I think maybe the explanation, and I don't know this, but I would imagine it's because your traditional Hollywood film is they're lost, they get found.
Right? Sure.
So it's maybe they're just trying to plant a seed of, well, people are noticing now that they're lost. So eventually all they need to do is hold out because eventually they're going to be found.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like that is a note that you think about after the movie's over. Cause if you don't know this story at all and you're watching it, it puts in that hope that it's like, oh, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. And then, oh, they're not. And it's more like something you think about retroactively. Like,
yeah, I can see that.
Like the movie The Purge, the first movie The Purge. I'm like, why are people wearing ghost masks and being weird, creepy people? Everything they're doing is legal. But in the moment, you're like, ooh, that's creepy. And then you think about it later, and you're like, that makes no sense.
Oh, yeah.
That makes no sense. That shouldn't have happened.
Well, I was, dumb. Like, the whole getting rescued thing, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, one of them has to be alive, because otherwise, because it said true story, and I always have that urge to, like, Wikipedia something right away and be like, okay, well, this is what happened. And I didn't, because I wanted to just be like, I'm going to watch this and see what happened. And the whole time I'm like, one of them has to stay alive because otherwise how do they know that all this shit happened? Like how it happened?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, they're just fucking yes. Like, this is probably just sharks.
Oh yeah, they made it all up.
So like that was my big like thing, because like when something's based on a true story, I guess they should have said like loosely guessed on a true story. Like, there's nothing based about it. Like, you know, these people just get off the boat and then they basically just guess on what happens. And so like that the whole time I'm like, okay, well he, you know, like he gets bit and I'm like, okay, well I thought he was gonna live, but then she must live. And then she goes in the water. I'm like, horse shit. Because
I knew you were gonna hate that part, Chris.
How do they know what happened at all? So yeah, that part pissed me off. Yeah,
well, what,
right.
My one of my big things that I asked while watching it was, so they get sent out, and maybe this is a scuba diving thing to where you get all turned around or whatever, but it's like you don't know that you're east of land or west of land or north or south of land. Like,
yeah, I would agree. I'd have no idea.
Okay, then maybe that's just a thing.
Unless, like, obviously I was out there for hours and I saw where the sun was eventually setting, but
sure,
as of, like, now my head pops up out of water, I'd be like, oh.
Yeah, okay. Because, you know, I haven't been scuba diving, I've only been snorkeling, but it was like I need to know exactly where land is, you know, because I was paranoid enough.
Right.
Where I'm like,
and well, I'm never scuba diving ever, thank you.
Oh, okay, well, saving the money.
Yeah, thanks.
Where are you gonna see
that? Like, for me, I think the thing about it is like, like the scene I really like, the scene, like for me, the where the movie picked up is like where she's kind of giving him the silent treatment and he gets mad at her and is like,
it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And for me, that's kind of where the movie finally picked up because, you know, and I guess this just comes down to what you like in movies. It finally became about character.
Yeah.
And these people were actually having a real conversation. It takes place 45 minutes into the movie.
Right.
But there was something finally happening as opposed to, and, you know, like I have no problem with them popping up and being like, okay, let's wait this out. Let's see what happens. Cause that seems normal, but there's just a degree where for me, at least I'm like, these big human interactions probably should have been, you know, that would have been 10 minutes in the movie if you started on the boat.
Yeah. You know, I did write myself the question for both of you. What, you know, in, say you're in this situation and she gets that initial sting by the stingray.
It's a jellyfish.
Jellyfish.
And it doesn't hurt that
jellyfish,
bad.
Jellyfish, that's right.
Whiny
sorry.
Babies.
But I was like, what would you do? Like, I wouldn't have any ideas. I'd be like, all right, we're lost and you're hurt now. I guess we're just sitting here.
Like, I don't know, because, like, they don't know which way to swim, you mean?
Yeah, well, they don't know how to do, like, anything. You know, they just kind of throw you out there in the middle of the ocean and they don't give you any kind of, like, hey, in case of emergency.
I'm sure they do now.
You know? It's just like, wow, they don't have like, not that they would each be getting a flare gun or something, but they don't have like some kind of vest that has lights on it or something. Or...
Well, they probably have like GPS vests now or something.
Yeah.
That are like, you're getting too far away from your boat or your people.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we can't leave you. Cause like I read that this company didn't even get sued. They just like,
well, cause they're both dead. Who's gonna sue them?
Her family.
Just kidding.
And as soon as that bitch went under the water, I'm like, Eric, goddamn it.
I'll tell you right now, I would never find myself in this situation. I've never, you know, my comfort level is couch. That's where I'm most comfortable.
Well, I mean, I can be at the beach and be like waist deep in the ocean. That's fine. But like, first of all, like I'm not a strong swimmer, so I would never like scuba, like do anything where water is like above my head for elongated periods of time, so it doesn't matter. But
So one of the other things in my notes here that I wonder if you guys noticed at all is I thought that the music was completely over the top. Like I really kind of struggled with it. Was essentially for me at times doing the bum bum bum, you know, like once anything would happen, basically. It was trying to make that moment even more impactful than it already was.
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing about this movie at the end. It's not a found footage movie, so it's worth noting, but there is this degree of like, oh, you know, we want to make it feel real, you know what I mean? So it's like, there's real sharks, they're out in the real ocean, you know, it's like, they have conversations about what happens if you drink salt water, like all this stuff that's real, real, real. Right? But then they introduce this stuff that's very movie, so it's like, the dramatic music and the captain has a flashback and all this other stuff. So it's like, to me, it feels like this movie is two different movies fighting each other constantly.
Yeah.
where it's like, it's super realistic, bum, 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 and all this. And I'm like, nope, nope, that's not realistic. That's a movie. If you want to be a movie, be a movie. Embrace the moviness.
Or like the, because you said it was a husband and wife, so like they got done making the movie and then the wife went in the editing room and she's like, we're gonna add some stuff here.
we're gonna show you.
Yeah. We're gonna get some sweet music. And then he watches the lady, he's like, what did you do?
Why did you do this?
Yeah.
But don't worry, we have our ultra-realistic shark getting gutted at the end of the movie.
Yeah, oof. So one of the things that I did like is, like Cameron had mentioned earlier, I do like it once they start fighting amongst each other. You know, like we had said that it feels real, it feels very real. I think that once he gets bit significantly, I even again this time got tense. Like I could feel like my, you know, like I was tensing up while I was watching it just because I can't imagine, you know, having like a chunk of you missing and you're already in a panic state and just what your mind would be going through in that sort of situation. But what I wanted to say was, and what I thought was interesting was I thought that I liked the, looking back on it, how the woman is the stronger character from the beginning. It seems like she's the one who's got the more quote unquote important job or the more, stressful job or, you know, it seems like she's potentially the breadwinner, you know,
yeah.
And she is complaining when she gets hurt, but she doesn't lose her mind the way that he does.
She's like, are you done yelling?
Yeah, start when he's screaming and yelling. And so I thought that was interesting. And then when she, you know, is holding on and decides whether she's going to make the choice herself or whether she's going to be eaten, she decides on what's best for her, what's right in her mind. And that's kind of a personal decision. And I don't necessarily think that has anything to do with how strong your character is, but I think that it's just interesting that it was a woman that was the final one.
Well, and left. She like figures out he's dead and like, obviously she's upset, but she doesn't like lose her shit.
Yeah. She doesn't do the no.
Right. No. I'll never let go, Daniel.
Yeah, she doesn't Titanic it.
She should have done that a little bit. I would have laughed a lot.
So, that
yeah,
was it.
It's interesting. I liked also that, cause like at the beginning, you know, we kind of talked about it was, for me, it was kind of awkward between them, like the coupley thing. But I feel like once they got in the water, like things, there were like coupley things that they did where like she gets stung and she's like, oh, will you look at it? Like that's stuff that you ask your husband to do. Like my leg hurts. Go under the water and look at my leg. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They had like little moments where he's like, oh, tell me if it's bad. Is it bad? And like, I thought that once maybe like the water was helping them be better actors. Cause like once they got in the water, everything seemed to go.
Yeah. Like maybe
obviously not plot wise go better for them, but like movie wise.
Well, also I can imagine like trying to be an actor and it's like the first half of this movie, it's just like, what's my dialogue? Be like, hey, what are you thinking? I don't know. Okay. You want to talk? No. I'm like,
right.
what can I bring to that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do. You know, I watched this with Anella. She had said at one point, I was expecting a hell of a lot more than this. So I was like, all right.
And she was just eyeballing you.
Yeah. Just looking at like, this is bullshit.
Shitty movie. Yeah.
She, you know, hated it when they fought. She was just like, oh no, you know, and was kind of more into the movie, hating it, you know, not like hating it, movie choice wise, but just not liking that they were at each other's throat. And then she was really kind of pissed when the woman decides to kill herself. Like she's like,
she was going to be ripped apart by sharks.
She was essentially like Cruise style though. It was like, fuck you for making me watch this.
Right.
And like, and she just kills herself and that's the end. Come on. So that's,
yeah, really, but I that's probably the ending I choose rather than getting ripped up by sharks. I'll be honest right now.
Well, I would not want to be like eaten, but still alive.
Oh yeah.
So I would definitely go for the drowning, which is,
I don't know if I'd be bald enough to swallow water though.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I'd be like, call. Okay, I'm going to drown myself. And then I'd go under the water with my breath held and be like, oh my God, I can't do it.
Like, nope, nope, nope. Oh, now I'm getting
okay,
eaten.
Okay, no,
water.
Now
I guess,
can't.
Like, I think the idea is supposed to be, she like, you're exhausted.
And she just says, fuck it.
Yeah.
Let herself sink.
Nuts.
That's, you seen the sequel?
No, I've not. I've not seen the sequel. I would imagine it's terrible.
It's amazing.
I would imagine it's awful, but I don't know. I could be completely wrong. I could be completely
wrong. You're probably up more on the right side.
Yeah. So, if you guys don't have anything else, we can move on to our last film. I'm guessing you're done, yes?
I'm done. Yeah,
I mean, I'm glad I saw it, but I probably will never see it again.
Sure. Yeah, it's a, okay. So that was that.
I mean, it's kind of too bad that, to some extent, that it's like, these two actors have never really done much else, because I think once they're in the water, like, it seems like once you give them material, they were pretty good.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, the female is, she was on an episode of White Collar, an episode of the show here and there. She's which I thought was kind of interesting. She was like almost 40 when she did this movie.
Oh, really? Wow. I wouldn't have guessed that at all.
No, me neither.
She's 47 now. So she would have been 37, 38.
Really?
Dang.
Good for her.
Good for her. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, wow, good for you.
Nice.
Good for you. All right, well, let's move on to our final film. It is the 2005 version of War of the Worlds.
Okay, 8:30?
We said 8 o'clock.
Hello, Dad.
Get a hug?
Robbie's got a paper, which he's yet to begin.
I just gotta type it up.
You just gotta start writing it first.
Take care of our kids.
You got nothing to worry about.
That is so weird. The wind is blowing toward the storm.
It's okay.
Lightning doesn't strike twice.
Where's the thunder?
Robbie, you saw the lightning?
Yeah, 26 times on Lincoln Avenue.
You feel that?
But you don't! You don't!
This is not a war. This is an extermination.
Ray Ferrier, I guess I never pronounced his last name, is a divorced dock worker and less than perfect father. When his ex-wife and her new husband drop off his teenage son Robbie and young daughter Rachel for a rare weekend visit, a strange and powerful lightning storm suddenly touches down. What follows is the extraordinary battle for the future of humankind through the eyes of one American family fighting to survive it in this contemporary retelling of H.G. Wells' seminal classic sci-fi thriller.
So this is Rachel's selection. So why'd you pick this one?
So,
had you seen it before?
Well, yes. I was watching, flipping through channels, and this was on AMC one night, and it was, like, probably, halfway through. And I am hot and cold on Tom Cruise. Like, some people love him, and some people hate him. I'm like, he's not my favorite, and so, like, I avoided watching this movie because he was in it, and I'm like, oh, God, it's just another one of Tom Cruise's ego movies. Look how fast I can run for being 85. And so I didn't watch it, but I was like watching, we were just like laying in bed watching this, and I'm like, dang, this is kind of crazy. And so it was on again, and so I recorded it and then rewatched it again. And I don't know why, I think it's probably because it was a book first, but I thought it was really interesting. And I don't know. So it just like, I just like happened upon it, and I thought it was pretty good.
Okay, Cameron.
Yeah, I think for me, it's interesting to talk about this movie because when it came out, it was right in the middle of all the World is Against Tom Cruise storm. And I think because this was when he was promoting this movie was the famous, Matt, you're glib, Matt, on the Today Show with all those War of the World posters hanging in the back.
Yeah.
So I think this movie kind of got marred by everything about, Tom Cruise. I like Tom Cruise. I don't dislike him. I'm not going to say he's like one of my favorite actors. I'll go see everything he's in, but I definitely, enjoy most of his movies. But I think this is interesting to watch through the prism of Steven Spielberg. Cause that was before all the Tom Cruise stuff. The big thing about this movie was that Steven Spielberg returns the aliens, but this time they're evil aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously doing Close Encounters in E.T. where there's a far more benevolent or friendly aliens.
I think E.T. is evil.
I do not agree.
That statement, Chris.
But I think it's interesting. It's also interesting to watch this movie now. You know, it's that hindsight's 2020 thing. And I think it's interesting to watch this movie now when you think about Steven Spielberg's filmography right after 9/11.
Interesting.
And I think this kind of goes in line with, I know I'm trying to talk over it. So yeah, but like the movies that came right after 9/11, I mean, are Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, The Terminal, and then this. And I think if you look at all those movies, cause even though Spielberg does not have writing credit on those movies, he's one of those hands-on directors when it comes to the script, in a big way. So if you think about it, it's like Minority Report is about, basically a police state, and the police are going to arrest you before you've done anything wrong, which is a nice little allegory for, Bush. Catch Me If You Can, though a lighthearted kind of film, is also like someone trying to change their life and the government is after them in the form of Tom Hanks. And then The Terminal, I think, is pretty clearly, distrusting of an immigrant because, there's a war happening in his country, that he has nothing to do with. And this film, War of the Worlds, is a force we do not understand that has surprisingly attacked us. And some of us want to run. Some of us want to go fight them and make them pay. But for the most part, there's just confusion and destruction. Mm. And I think at the time, that's not something that would have been very clear when you're in the heat and in the heart of all the post 9/11 and Iraq and all that other stuff. But now, 10 years later, you can look at this movie and go, oh, yeah, to me that seems pretty clear.
That's interesting.
Nice. And then I think he caps it off with Munich, obviously.
Sure.
Which is a giant revenge film.
Right.
And what does revenge do to us? So yeah, I think for me, but that said, I do like this movie. I still have some major problems with it, but I do like it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think for me, I had seen this before and wasn't really that high on it. And this time I watched it and liked it a little better. But I remember I watched it and was just kind of like, all right, well, this is all right. There were some things that I thought were interesting choices. Like I thought that it was almost that like Steven Spielberg thing, you know, where fathers and sons always have to have conflict.
Right.
You know, he's very concerned with fathers and sons, and or just fathers and their children. But I was really having a hard time with how much of a jerk Tom Cruise had to be at the beginning. Like, I thought that they completely overplayed it. And I thought that he was too much of a jerk. Like, it wasn't like he's just this kind of rough guy and he's, you know, doesn't know how to be a parent. It wasn't like that. He was just like actively a dickhead. And I was like, okay. And I understand that it's like, oh, well, now that he's going to protect his kids and save them and it's going to make them all grow together as a family. But I was like, well, fuck this guy. Like, I don't give a shit about this guy. Like, you know, I was like that. Like, I was turned off to him immediately. And it wasn't like, oh, I hope he survives. It wasn't like that for me.
I had more of a hard time believing he was a dock worker.
Old Tommy.
But I get what you're saying. Like, I don't know. I don't know. He did seem really dicky at the beginning. But I guess, like, I'm just so biased, because, like, I was like, well, I mean, he could die, and I wouldn't super care. So I don't know. It's just my fault for not liking him in the first place, I guess.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting. To me, with as far as like the character goes, like it makes sense because it's like he needs some kind of arc in the movie. It's the Alan Grant arc from Jurassic Park. It just happens to be that these aren't in Jurassic Park. It's not his kids. There's actually, and then obviously the Tim Robbins basement is practically the Velociraptor kitchen scene. Which I'm fine with. I really enjoy the first hour. It's so funny. Like the introduction to Tom Cruise, where I think most of the heist is supposed to be like, what a dick, is like when he won't help his boss. But watching that scene again, I'm like, no, Tom Cruise is right. Like, as someone who works at a union job, I'm like, no, there are union regulations. He's right. I think the audience is supposed to sit there going like, what a dick. His boss just wants some help. But I'm like, no, yeah, you're supposed to wait 12 hours between shifts at a dock. You might fall asleep and hurt somebody. He's right.
I was more of like when he's calling his son Robbie a dick, and when he's just being not prepared and just being like a terrible place for the kids to end up at that house.
Yeah, and he's like, order Chinese or whatever, like.
You know, and this is all you got, Robbie. You didn't get food.
It's the daughter. The Robbie left. Robbie took the car.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, when they get to the,
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and he's supposed to be fine, yeah.
Like, you're supposed to get food. He's like, well, this is all that was in your fridge. It's supposed to be a zing. And I'm like, God, this guy's a jerk off.
Well, and I mean, like, we've obviously talked about, like, he learns through aliens to be a better father. But, what's her name? Rachel.
Dakota Fanning.
Yeah, she's, having a panic attack, and he has, like, no idea how to fix it, because he's never around them, and he doesn't know how to make her feel better, and he's just like, knock it off, like, suck it up, so.
Although I will say, the scene where he goes, like, when they're in the basement, he goes, Rachel, stop talking. I'm like, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Are they going to give Tim Robbins some, like, Lifetime Achievement Award for being the creepiest person ever?
I feel like they should.
He definitely would win that.
He was he was doing the Mystic River Eyes.
He was doing Mystic River Eyes.
It was crazy.
So I think for me, like, I'll just get into it. Like, I really enjoy the first hour of this movie. I think the whole stuff with the when the aliens come down and that whole thing and the people turning into dust, the dynamic between the three of them, I really enjoy. When the movie falls apart for me, and it doesn't fall apart completely, but just enough, is... I think the news reporter is not necessarily a bad scene, but it's a little too expository. I don't mind exposition too much, but there's a degree where I'm like, I didn't need an explanation.
Yeah, are you talking about the
plane crash?
Yeah, the plane crash, the visually that stuff is cool, but when she's like, look at my video, they came down in the lightning, this, that, and the other, I'm like, I don't need to know that. Like, I would have been perfectly, kind of like when we talked about The Road, like, I'm perfectly fine just sticking with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Right. I don't need the characters to enter the movie to be like, here's what's going on.
Well, you know what this reminded me of is you were talking about this point in Spielberg's life and, what this meant and if this was like a reverse or rock or whatever. It was like it reminded me of like Signs kind of the film Signs to where, there's this huge thing going on with aliens, but you don't know what's going on. You're just stuck with the family. And it doesn't matter because you're just with them and you hope they survive and that's fine.
Because it's the characters you're invested in.
Yeah, because those are the characters that you care about. Well, here I was like, well, I don't like him. And, with Rachel's character being so shrill, with her being like, I get that she's a young kid and she's scared and that's what a young kid would be like, but I was just like, I don't know.
I think she's very good. I think she displays this. I think the scenes that work really well. I think like when they're in the car and when like she's like, what's going on? And she's freaking out.
Yeah.
That's very real to me. And then when their car gets ambushed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff I think people forget about this movie that I think it's those little scenes that I think work very well. I think for me, the biggest problem with this movie, truth be told, at the end of the day is Robbie. I think his arc of, I'm gonna go fight. I don't need the rest of the information.
Yes.
I don't need to know how they're gonna. It becomes, and I understand its point. Its point is that, because they make a big deal about Robbie takes care of Rachel. So Robbie being out of the picture means Tom Cruise has to step up and be a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can't rely on Robbie to take care of Rachel. He has to take care of Rachel. I understand plot-wise his point, but I can't get past the fact that I feel like he kind of switches on a dime. He immediately becomes, like, very gung-ho about killing the aliens.
Yeah, his plan is shitty. Like,
and then, not to mention the fact that the end is just a giant puss-out.
Yes.
Like, I understand it would have been a downer to kill him, but we think he's dead anyway. Until we find out he's not. His clothes aren't even ruined. And from the look on that street, I guess the aliens just never went to Boston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that is the most, like, everything's fine. The windows are still good to go. So apparently I guess the aliens only attack the working class.
Could be. Could be.
Because except for the exception of that, you know, the plane crashing on Tom Cruise's ex-wife's lawn, that area was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, aliens never went there.
You know, and stereotypically, I would have hoped for there to be consequences within the family.
You know? And I mean, I do not need to see Robbie's body get like incinerated, him going like, ugh, and get like burnt, or I don't need that. But it just gets to where it's like, again, like, story-wise, what's the point of this character? The point of the character is basically just supposed to be like, well, you know, not everyone would run. Some people would want to fight.
Yeah.
That's fine. But to me, that's Independence Day.
Sure. Well, I mean, they could have had that from the very beginning then, to where, you know, he then is getting pulled from his dad and from his little sister, to where it's like, he's like, you know, this is what I want to go do right away. You know,
yeah, and there's not much of that. It's only like the convoy drives by and suddenly he's like, stop, take me with you.
Yeah. And that's,
and then even like Tom Cruise even has the line. He's like, what's your plan? And I'm like, good. You acknowledged it. But then Robbie's answer is like, we got to do something.
Yeah.
And then Rachel yells at him. And that's when it's like, okay, you know, clearly you got to get rid of Robbie so Tom Cruise can step up, because that's the arc of this film. It doesn't mean Robbie to me is not a really annoying character. And I like that actor. I like Justin Chatwin, but I'm like, he's such an annoying character.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. What did we think of the way that it ends, Cruz? With they're like, Native Americans and we just need to establish some bacteria and they'll all be wiped out.
That is the book.
Smallpox blankets, okay, from helicopters?
Helicopter smallpox blankets. That was the secret weapon.
It is worth noting that is in the book.
Okay.
Which is, I like that ending as a book, because it's like something so big and terrifying can be brought down by tiny bacteria. Like, that's funny, ironically. It's funny to me, though, in a Hollywood movie, that we didn't, like, get some sort of giant bomb and huge explosion, you know, and, like, shoot, you know, but...
Yeah, I guess I would have expected a little more show instead of tell.
Yeah, a little more of, like, a climactic end, yeah.
But that's again, where you come to, it's Independence Day and not a movie about characters.
Right, and I understand that.
Because it wouldn't make sense for Tom Cruise to, like, I'm gonna get in the helicopter!
Yeah, where he's not gonna be, Cousin Eddie.
Which, thank God, because again, like, the beginning we see his job as a dock worker, so, I mean, I'm just happy this movie didn't end on a fucking dock with him being like, this is my job, and like, him running over and, like, picking up a dock thing and throwing it.
Yeah, like, I can Tetris the shit out of this, and it's got the smallpox blankets inside.
I'm not, like, super disappointed. I'm just surprised that they didn't try to do something like that. Mm. You know, because it's, like, a big, huge Hollywood movie, but
I think it makes sense when you're in the script phase, or maybe even, you know, but when you get to, you know, when it's on screen, and Cameron talked about this with the Amazing Spider-Man ending, to where it's like your crowd kind of walks away going, all right. And that's now not what many studios would allow.
But I like it, because, like, they're not like, okay, we need to put the bow on this one.
Yeah, we don't need to make it a rousing, like, fuck yeah, kind of an ending, you know? I mean, you do by having them you know, win. But right. at the same time, it's not like, you know, Tom didn't do the magical Tetris and beat the aliens. So.
Right. There weren't like fireworks in the air and Star Spangled Banner playing. And...
yeah. It's true. So I don't know. So this is one where, you know, I can kind of appreciate it for what it was, but it was one where I was kind of like, all right, it was a lot like all of these actually, to where I was like, all right, well, that was fine enough.
Yeah.
That was good. But I wasn't like super passionate about any of these actually.
Yeah, I think it's worth going back to because now it's no longer mired in what was happening when it was going out. So if you look at it through a different lens, and there are some great sequences. I think the scene when Dakota Fanning goes to go to the bathroom, and then there's that river of bodies.
Oh yes.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
Like, there's a lot of great sequences in this movie. I think it's just easy to kind of forget about them because they're not the most bombastic sequences.
Yeah. What do you think of that? They were kind of zapped old Hollywood style. And then it turns out that they're dust as opposed to it more like a Save It Private Ryan sort of style. When they're all
I like it because that feels like a throwback to old sci-fi.
Okay. Because I remember when I first watched it going, oh, really? Like, they just kind of poof? Like, all right. But then I was like, well, I was sitting there thinking, like, imagine the amount of blood and mess that they would, I mean, it would be maybe a little much if they were trying to demonstrate how many people exactly were.
And there's something to it too. I love the fact that he goes in the bathroom and he's covered in it.
Oh yeah, that was good. Yeah,
but yeah, I liked the poop because I was like, "Shit, these guys are not fucking around."
Mm-hmm.
But like that scared me a little bit.
Nothing but clothes left behind.
That's right.
Man, there's doctors for days.
Yeah, and the movie also like I like that you know I noticed this on this watch is like when that thing comes out of the ground, there is that sense of like. It would have been, I think, you know, movie today, you know, Michael Bay movie or something like that. The thing would have come out of the ground and started shooting people right away just to have that, like, oh, shit, from the audience watching. But I like that the thing comes out of the ground and, like, in the movie, the characters are looking at this thing.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is this? And it's like, that feels, like, more real to me than, like, this thing just coming out of the ground and shooting, like, instantaneously.
And I do like that it came out in front of a church, too. You know, just a little F you.
Mm-hmm.
So I always like that. Well, do we have anything else? Or are we ready to wrap this baby up?
Well, I do want to touch on so my point about the why these films are mostly male centric.
Sure.
Not all the time, but mostly. And I remember reading this article once, and it basically talked about that. And I think this is why it happens this way. And we think of also movies like The Thing, which is an all male cast, and all this other stuff. And I remember reading this article once about. Generally, I mean, obviously every person's different, but there's generalities between, people. And that, generally speaking, when it comes to like news headlines and stuff like that, men will just read the headlines and take it as fact. Women will actually read the article, and do a little more research. Now, again, that's not always true for every person, but that's a general thing that I thought was very interesting. And I kind of thought about it in the case where, in the sense of survival, and basically meaning like, men are quicker to jump to conclusions than women are. Women will take their time and think more. And I thought about that in the sense of survival films where I think as an audience, we're far more willing to believe that men will turn on each other at the last second out of nowhere to save their own ass. You are going to have fun editing this show.
I will. Say something to me, Cruz. It usually goes away when you're talking.
Why?
I don't know. See? All right, go ahead, Cameron.
But yeah, basically, it's just the fact that, like, I think the reason these stories are probably generally mostly male-centric is, like, we far more believe as an audience that, like, men will turn on each other very quickly and for their own self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas something like, let's say, The Descent, the women try to take care of one another.
Right, yeah.
And I just find that fascinating.
Sure. Cruz, do you have anything else before wrapping us up?
No, I agree with that theory about men jumping to conclusions.
Not in your personal life, of course.
No, definitely. I don't know what you're talking about.
Brad's a logical man.
Well, that is true.
It's easy to be logical when you're right all the time.
Oh, boy. So anyway. If you have any comments for the show or movies you'd like to hear us talk about, please feel free to email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow the show over at Twitter at plainlabelpod, where you can follow us at EricWilliams79 and me at LadyZlag. We also have a Facebook page where you can like the show, just search Plain Label Podcast. And we want to thank Cameron for coming on and dropping some knowledge on us. If you want to hear more from you, Cameron, where do we find you?
You can find me at twitter.com/JurassicAlien. Also check out Cameron Watches Movies, my movie discussion show where I talk about more recent films, and then filmographies for me and Eric talking about directors' films. And I will be back. I've already talked to Eric about carving out October because there was a lack of horror last year.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We skipped over it, you know. I was so deep into the horror 2 years ago.
Right. Last year Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And
that's
whatnot.
Right. Yeah. And then at Cameron Watches. It wasn't it at Cameron Watches Movies, or was it at Filmographies, Cameron?
Cameron Watches Movies.
Yeah, where we did a weekly show of horror movies there too. So I was hip deep into the horror. So I needed a little bit of a break. But there's been a lot of stuff that's worth talking about that's coming out or that's come out since.
Hip so. Deep into the horror? Did you just make that up?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a new disco album.
Yeah. Hip deep into the horror.
Oh, that's funny. If you enjoyed the show and wanted to help us out, go to our website, plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. You can find an Amazon link that takes us to you to our homepage and bookmark it, or their homepage, sorry. And then buy stuff from Amazon through us and we'll get a little bit of money. And that would be very helpful. And thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with our new theme of childhood favorites. At first I was afraid, I was petrified. Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong, and I learned